It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump's first speech before the entire Congress Tuesday night featured many familiar themes, including his emphasis on public safety and national security. Mr. Trump also called on lawmakers to work together to repeal Obamacare.
With reforms that expand choice, increase access, lower costs, and at the same time provide better health care. Mandating every American to buy government-approved health insurance was never the right solution for our country.
Trump also outlined some of the progress made since his inauguration, including getting top companies to commit to new jobs here in the states. Former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear gave the customary Democratic response to Trump's speech. Beshear said Mr. Trump's approach to security makes the United States less safe, and he said he has, in his words, all but declared war on refugees and immigrants.
The president can and should enforce our immigration laws, but we can protect America without abandoning our principles and our moral obligation to help those fleeing war and terror, without tearing families apart, and without needlessly jeopardizing our military men and women fighting overseas.
Trump drew sharp criticism and court challenges over his executive order that suspended the nation's refugee admittance program and banned entry to anyone from 7 majority Muslim countries. The president plans to introduce a revised version of that order soon. For more news, we invite you to join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Russia and China exercised a double veto Tuesday to block action in the United Nations Security Council aimed at sanctioning the Syrian regime for using chemical weapons against its own population. Nikki Haley is the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations.
Russia and China made an outrageous and indefensible choice today. They refused to hold Bashar al-Assad's regime accountable for the use of chemical weapons.
The draft resolution that was defeated sought to impose sanctions on the Assad regime for the use of chemical weapons in at least 3 attacks on its own population in 2014 and 2015. U.S. House Speaker Paul Ryan says answers are needed on reports of improper contact between President Donald Trump's campaign officials and Russia during the presidential campaign. Ryan was interviewed Tuesday on the NBC Today show. 3 congressional probes into possible links between the Trump campaign and Russia are underway. Ryan did not indicate whether a special prosecutor should be involved in the probe. He said a bipartisan investigation is necessary to help ensure that the intelligence information gathered is not compromised. The heir to the South Korea's Samsung empire has been indicted on bribery, embezzlement, and other charges in connection with the political corruption scandal involving President Park Geun-hye. The company's de facto leader, Lee Jae-yong, was charged Tuesday along with 4 company executives. Prosecutors had spent months building a case against Lee, alleging that he played a role and $37 million in payments made by Samsung executives to a friend of the Korean leader in exchange for government support for the merger of 2 Samsung affiliates. Lee has denied any wrongdoing. Malaysia's attorney general says 2 women arrested in connection with the killing of the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un will be charged Wednesday with murder. The 2 individuals, an Indonesian and Vietnamese suspects, have said they thought they were participating in a television prank show. The charges they will face carry the death penalty. Kim Jong-nam died February 13th, shortly after 2 women smeared what Malaysian authorities say was VX nerve agent on his face at the Kuala Lumpur airport. And the United States military has confirmed the killing of a top Taliban leader in a recent airstrike in Afghanistan's Kunduz province. The strike conducted Sunday as part of an operation with Afghan security forces killed Mullah Abdul Salam, the Taliban commander for Kunduz, along with 4 other enemy combatants. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, March 1st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. President Donald Trump has delivered his first address to both houses of the U.S. Congress.
I am here tonight to deliver a message of unity and strength. And it is a message deeply delivered from my heart. A new chapter of American greatness is now beginning. A new national pride is sweeping across our nation.
As U.S. President Donald Trump speaking Tuesday night before the Congress, growing street justice in Cameroon is leading to the erosion of law and order. The International Organization for Migration has called for urgent action for millions of people facing famine in three African countries and Yemen. And Gambia's parliament removes age limit for presidential candidates.
Having gone through the committee of the whole house without amendments, but a third time and passed. Those in favor, please say aye. Those in favor, say no. The ayes have it.
Thus, the Speaker of Gambia's Parliament and the American Public Broadcasting Service begins a new series on 200,000 years of African history. Those stories, plus our final Black History Month facts, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Donald Trump Tuesday night delivered his first address to both houses of the U.S. Congress. The president began his speech emphasizing what he called the renewal of the American spirit.
I am here tonight to deliver a message of unity and strength, and it is a message deeply delivered from my heart. A new chapter of American greatness is now beginning. A new national pride is sweeping across our nation, and a new surge of optimism is placing impossible dreams firmly within our grasp. What we are witnessing today is the renewal of the American spirit. Our allies will find that America is once again ready to lead. All the nations of the world, friend or foe, will find that America is strong, America is proud, and America is free.
Mr. Trump promised to reform what he called the current and outdated immigration system. He cited what he called a merit-based system used in some other countries that require people entering their borders to be able to financially support themselves.
Protecting our workers also means reforming our system of legal immigration. Nations around the world, like Canada, Australia, and many others, have a merit-based immigration system. It's a basic principle that those seeking to enter a country ought to be able to support themselves financially. Yet in America, we do not enforce this rule, straining the very public resources that our poorest citizens rely upon. I believe that real and positive immigration reform is possible as long as we focus on the following goals: to improve jobs and wages for Americans, to strengthen our nation's security, and to restore respect for our laws. If we are guided by the well-being of American citizens, then I believe Republicans and Democrats can work together to achieve an outcome that has eluded our country for decades.
The president said he will ask Congress to consider a $1 trillion investment to rebuild infrastructure, creating millions of jobs. He also repeated one of his favorite themes: to replace Obamacare.
I will be asking Congress to approve legislation that produces a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure of the United States, financed through both public and private capital, creating millions of new jobs. This effort will be guided by two core principles: Buy American and Hire American. Tonight, I am also calling on this Congress to repeal and replace Obamacare. with reforms that expand choice, increase access, lower costs, and at the same time provide better health care. Action is not a choice, it is a necessity. So I am calling on all Democrats and Republicans in Congress to work with us to save Americans from this imploding Obamacare disaster.
President Trump said the U.S. will work with its allies to destroy ISIS.
As promised, I directed the Department of Defense to develop a plan to demolish and destroy ISIS, a network of lawless savages that have slaughtered Muslims and Christians and men and women and children of all faiths and all beliefs. We will work with our allies, including our friends and allies in the Muslim world, to extinguish this vile enemy from our planet. I have also imposed new sanctions on entities and individuals who support Iran's ballistic missile program and reaffirmed our unbreakable alliance with the State of Israel.
That's U.S. President Donald Trump speaking Tuesday night in his first address to a joint session of the U.S. Congress. Gambia's parliament on Tuesday amended the country's constitution to remove the age limit for presidential candidates. This came after new president Adama Barrow faced questions over his decision to nominate 68-year-old Fatoumata Jallow Tabajan as his vice president. Under a 1997 amendment, anyone over the age of 65 had been prevented from running for president of Gambia. Seni Mariner has details from Banjul.
In an unprecedented move, the Gambian National Assembly on Tuesday amended the country's 1997 constitution, removing the upper age limit for holding the office of the President of the Republic of the Gambia from 65 years. The former ruling party-dominated parliament also unanimously voted by revising the compulsory retirement age of a judge in the Superior Court, extending the age at which a judge should vacate his or her office from 70 to 75 years. Meanwhile, MPs also voted to reduce deposit to previous amount for all national elective positions ahead of the parliamentary elections scheduled for April 2017. The new amendment will enable any Gambian who has attained the age beyond 65 years to present him or herself as candidate for the president of the Gambia.
Having gone through the committee of the whole House without amendments, but it a third time and passed. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those in favor, say no. The ayes have it.
According to Mai Ahmed Fati, Minister of Interior, who tabled the amendment, the bill will consolidate democracy.
The amendment will truly consolidate democracy in our country. Will eliminate discrimination against senior citizens who would have so much in terms of experience, competence, and qualification to serve our country. It is envisaged that this will facilitate and encourage qualified, competent, and experienced Gambians to be appointed as judges of the Superior Court or be elected to political office.
Some former ruling party lawmakers hail Barrow administration has real democracy and that campaign promises being fulfilled not in the Donald Trump way. Former ruling lawmaker Nati Balde said the bill is not controversial.
The bill to amend the 1997 constitution, sir.
Honorable Speaker, it's not a controversial one. Most of the points are based on the argument proposed by the Honorable Minister. Constraining and putting an age limit means that everybody over that age as a Gambian is denied his rights. And that doesn't seem right to me.
Honorable Samba Jallow is the former minority leader and now a member of the coalition government in the parliament.
Honorable Speaker, removing the upper and the lower limit of the office of the president, after the law was very discriminative because anybody ranging from the 18 years to 35, you are discriminated to participate in the office of the president, and above 65, you are discriminated.
Meanwhile, President Adama Barrow has relieved the Chief of Defense Staff of the Gambia Armed Forces, General Usman Baji, and replaced him with his National Security Advisor, General Masani Kinte. General Baji is now redeployed to serve in the Foreign Service. For VOA Daybreak Africa, I am Seni MK Mariner reporting from Banjul.
Today's Wednesday, March 1st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Judicial authorities in Cameroon are urging the population to cooperate with the justice process instead of taking the law into their own hands. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, the advice comes as incidents of street justice have been growing.
Hundreds of people shout as a crowd beat two men in the Mokolo neighborhood in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. Among those watching helplessly is Théophile Ahinda. He says the two men seized a lady's handbag and refused a policeman's orders for them to surrender. He says the crowd almost lynched them, but the military intervened to save their lives. The two suspects were rushed to the hospital with blood oozing from their nostrils and ears. Hardly a day goes by in Cameroon without reports of what is known locally as jungle justice. Local media report landlords who remove doors of tenants' homes because they have not paid rent, or workers who block traffic because they are angry with their bosses. Cases of people attacking police stations to free suspects have also been reported in several regions. Barrister Jackson Ngi Kamga, the president of the Cameroon Bar Council, sees an erosion of law and order.
La justice privée, c'est simplement la manifestation d'une défiance.
He says private justice is gaining ground because the population lacks confidence in the justice system. He says the top reason is that the population does not think the system is working. In a speech last week, opening the judicial year, Supreme Court Chief Justice Daniel Mikobe Sonny singled out two problems: perceived corruption in the legal system and lengthy delays to the judicial process. He said private justice is taking Cameroon back to a primitive state in which those who are powerful dictate their own laws. He said they have witnessed an unprecedented upsurge of various forms of private justice that threaten the very foundation of Cameroon as a state of law. He calls for more cooperation from the population. Barrister Monjam Fombat sees two issues that need to be addressed to restore trust, greater protection for witnesses who report crimes, and greater accountability for alleged abuses by security forces like torture and arbitrary arrest.
Maybe somebody wants to shoot you and you remove your own gun first and shoot that person. Maybe you want to slap me and I remove a gun and I shoot you. No civilized society will tolerate people taking the law into their own hands. Everybody must know that when you have a problem, you must seek redress through the courts.
The president of Cameroon's National Commission on Human Rights and Freedoms, Chemuta Banda, has sought to dispel what the commission found in recent polls to be a common myth. He says jungle justice does not reduce crime. Instead, it multiplies abuses. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The International Organization for Migration, IOM, has warned that many of the millions of people facing famine in three African countries and in Yemen risk starving to death without urgent action to help them. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
More than 20 million people reportedly are suffering from severe food shortages in South Sudan, Somalia, Yemen, and northeast Nigeria. Somalia's problems are largely due to a severe drought, though conflict also plays a part. In the cases of South Sudan, Yemen, and northeast Nigeria, the United Nations says man-made disasters caused by conflict, insecurity, extreme violence, and economic degradation are behind the food crises facing these countries. Famine was declared in parts of Unity State in South Sudan on February 20th. International Organization for Migration spokesman Joel Millman says as many as 100,000 people may be at risk.
Without access to timely humanitarian aid, famine is likely to spread throughout the country. The number of people facing severe food insecurity is expected to reach 5.5 million by July, the height of the lean season. The current number that we think are facing food insecurity is 4.9 million, so approximately 500,000 more.
IOM reports the humanitarian situation in Somalia is rapidly deteriorating and the likelihood of famine is increasing. The organization says a growing number of people are fleeing to Ethiopia in search of food and basic services. As for Yemen, the agency warns the dire food crisis being experienced across the country already has reached famine conditions in some areas. It blames the conflict and worsening conditions for pushing millions of displaced Yemenis into greater danger. IOM reports that about 5 million people in northeastern Nigeria are in urgent need of food aid. It says the ongoing Boko Haram insurgency has prevented many people from farming and forced nearly 2 million to flee their homes. The agency says there is still time to avert a catastrophe and stop famine from spreading throughout these four countries if the international community moves fast. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A new six-hour series by the U.S. Public Broadcasting Service, PBS, attempts a monumental task to reveal the truth of 200,000 years of history in the African continent, from the origins of human civilization to the threshold of the modern world. This, according to acclaimed historian and series executive producer Henry Louis Gates, Jr., who takes viewers on a journey to explore the vast contributions by Africans that have shaped the continent and the world.
American historian and filmmaker Henry Louis Gates Jr. wants you to rethink your lessons on African history.
We in the West have created a fiction of Africa as isolated, static, and completely cut off. Nothing could be further from the truth.
In this preview of PBS's new six-hour series, Africa's Great Civilizations, Gates takes on a show-and-tell myth-busting tour covering 200,000 years of African history, from its origins and earliest empires to advanced commercial and manufacturing centers and colonial exploitation, the clash of civilizations. Those who attended a preview screening at New York's Council on Foreign Relations say the film sparks personal revelations that Western-centric history books sometimes fail to mention.
My understanding was the reason that there was so little about Africa in history was that, you know, there was nothing written, there was no records, it was all oral. It was, you know, there weren't really these great civilizations anyway. And it's really interesting how people are now finding ways to shine a light on these things in ways that, you know, qualify as history.
In one episode, Gates takes us through the continent's empires of gold, bringing to life the economic prowess of the West African Mali Empire and its 14th century emperor.
It's often claimed Mansa Musa is the richest man who has ever lived.
Most people's notion of Africa is much more recent. It's more about slavery and colonialism and some of the challenges that the continent has faced over the last several decades. But I think what the film does and what the series does is to connect today and where Africa is today with its past and its history.
Appenteng adds that for future African civilizations to prosper, human capital must be developed to its full potential.
The whole world has a huge stake in Africa really being successful. A lot of the talent, I think, is going to be on the African continent.
Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
It's no secret that African countries are struggling to supply enough electricity to their rapidly growing populations, but some companies see the challenge as the chance for Africa to go green. Lenny Ruvaga takes us inside East Africa's largest biogas energy plant in Naivasha, Kenya.
VegPro runs its factory here in Naivasha entirely on clean energy converted from biomass. The company grows and exports vegetables and flowers to the international market, but it also provides waste products for use by the energy park. General Manager Gareth Wilkie quality checks the plants.
Kenya sort of is one of the forerunners in clean energy, so automatically made sense for us to move into that arena so that we could sustain ourselves with our own energy, and obviously we get the benefits of the byproduct of the clean energy back onto the land.
Biomass is a really just a technical term for decomposing plant residue and animal waste. Here, it is converted into biogas that then fuels generators. The Gorge Farm Energy Park became operational almost 2 years ago. It now supplies power to VegPro and Kenya's National Grid. The 1 megawatt it sells to the government can power up to 5,000 houses, says the energy park's engineer, Christopher Macharia.
We are the first biogas power plant of this scale in East Africa. And of course, we've taken a very holistic process that takes biomass residue, converts it to sustainable energy, and at the end gives you two very useful byproducts, that is solid and liquid fertilizer.
The energy park is run by Biojoule, a 50% Kenyan-owned subsidiary of the UK-based energy group Tropical Power. The park cost $8 million to set up.
That's Lenny Ruvaga reporting from Naivasha, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is 26 minutes past the hour. It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, March 1st. On this day in 1949, Joe Louis retired as heavyweight boxing champion after holding the title for a record 11 years and 8 months. Also on this day in 1933, Merle Evers Williams was born. She would later become the first woman to head the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. On this day in 1927, Harry Belafonte, the son of Caribbean-born immigrants, was born. He would go on to become one of the most popular vocalists of the post-war era. Also, on this day in 1780, Pennsylvania became the first U.S. state to abolish slavery. On this day in 1961, President John F. Kennedy established the Peace Corps as a new agency within the Department of State. And on this day in African history, 1960, Pope John elevated Bishop Laurien Rugambwa of Tanganyika to the College of Cardinals, the first black cardinal in the modern era. Those are your Black History Month and African History Facts for today, March 1st. Congratulations to Angelo Kasote of Mpika in Zambia, Johnson Okwo Kamalu of Port Harcourt, Nigeria, and G. Roberto F. Kwemeni of Jokele District in Bong County, Liberia. You are the winners of our February 28th question, who is the first African-American woman to serve as U.S. Secretary of State? The answer, Condoleezza Rice. And that concludes our Black History Month and African History Facts and Contest for this year. Thank you for listening and participating. We'll see you again in February 2018, God willing. And that's it for this Wednesday, March 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the latest political developments in Somalia as the country moves forward under the leadership of newly elected President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.